Hello, Danmo.
Hello, Justnell. Doesn't work as well.
No.
Does not work as well.
We had to call you Danmo because there were two guys with Dan M at Macworld. It was super confusing. We didn't really call you.
There were two Dan M. There was one Dan M. There's one, two Dans. One Dan M. Was there another Dan M?
Dan Miller.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but like,
that's why
there were two other Dan M's. Sorry, I misunderstood
what
you were
saying.
Not
two other Dan M's.
It's ambiguous.
We had two Dan M's. You.
Right. I was one of them.
And Dan Miller. And so you became Danmo.
I did.
Which we were joking about, and then people actually did refer to you as that occasionally.
People call me that. People call me DM sometimes. Paul Kafasis always calls me DM.
Yeah, I'll send you a DM. DM.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we got into that today because apparently somebody confused me and Dom Melton because of the initials.
Well, that's the only way they would confuse you two, right?
We are not terribly alike otherwise. I have met Don Melton.
Yeah.
I've sat at a table and had a drink with Don Melton. Yeah.
But so you guys have that in common.
Yeah, we both sat at that table.
Yep.
That was true. 100%.
Yeah. Lots of stuff going on this week. Apple released a bunch of press releases.
Yeah. Those were their best new products, those press releases.
I think the iPad thing. So two bits of news this week. The soft product releases and Apple buying Workflow. And you know, you and I jumped on those for our Macworld columns this week for sure. And I also wrote a Workflow thing, like a slideshow for Tom's Guide about that. So we got it covered. But I think the iPad thing, I mean, I wrote it on Macworld, but you know, $329 iPad, right? Like, it's a regular iPad. It's kind of, they cut the costs in some areas, so it's basically like an iPad Air with a more modern processor, an iPad Air 1 with a more modern processor in it. But getting the price down to $329 and, you know, less in education, that's an uninteresting product that is a big move strategically for Apple.
Well, yeah, and I talked about this a little bit. I did the Apple Talk podcast with Renee Ritchie and Michael Gartenberg yesterday, and we talked about this a little bit. And I mean, it's an interesting move strategically, especially in education. Though the Chromebooks have a very solid grasp on that, and you can get a Chromebook for still cheaper, I think, than you can get an iPad.
But it's within I'd say it's within hailing distance enough for Apple to make the argument about quality and you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then the iPad doesn't have a keyboard, so you know, Logitech has announced the same day that they worked with Apple to create this rugged keyboard case thing that is for education as well, so that makes it more expensive.
And added piece too, which is always a problem. Those things get lost or broken or whatever, so it's a challenge. But I think enterprise too is a good example. Apple's actually, it's really weird that Apple does really well in the enterprise now and is having trouble with inroads in education, because it feels like it used to be very much the opposite. But I can imagine companies deploying large amounts of these iPads because they're so cheap and will probably handle most of the things that they want to do with them. Point of sale devices, this is a really good option, you know, all this kind of stuff where the iPad is, well positioned to fill a variety of niches. And so, you know, it's never going to compete with a $50 Fire tablet or whatever, right? But it is an iPad, which it has going for it.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting that this keeps Apple, like, Apple's still in the premium tablet business, right? I mean, this is a $329, it's not a $90 iPad, right? It's a $329 iPad. But if you look at the numbers, I was thinking back to when the quarterly results came out, and if you look at average selling price, which is one of those graphs that I have that most people don't care that much about, but I find it kind of interesting in terms of adding a little more more color to what Apple's results are. What you saw was, so they introduced the iPad Pro, and the average selling price of an iPad went up. So that basically, since Apple doesn't detail, right, like what models are selling, they only give us this raw iPad number, we have to guess for all, and Mac and iPhone too. We have to infer from the numbers what the mix of those products might be. And when the iPad Pro came out, you know, the average selling price went up. And that makes sense, right? But the last two quarters, it's gone back down. And at the holidays, it went back down by quite a bit. And it's very clear from that data that the low-cost iPads, so like the iPad Air 2 and the iPad Mini, were driving a lot of iPad sales during the holiday quarter, not iPad Pro models. And this, I feel like, is an endorsement of that fact, that this is an acknowledgement of that, which is there are a lot of people who just are not going to spend on an iPad Pro. They're just not going to do it, but they'll buy an iPad. I mean, going back to the name is another interesting thing, right? This is the fifth generation iPad. This is, we're going back to iPad name. The Air is gone. This is just, even though it looks like an iPad Air 1, it's just iPad. So now you go out and you're like, I want to buy an iPad. It's like Apple says, hey, $329 iPad. It's got a relatively new processor in it. It's not a three-year-old model. In fact, this is a brand new model, and it's $329, which is, I think it's a smart move on their part, because they know that this is people are looking for iPads in this market segment.
Right. Yeah. And so I think it is interesting to see that that positioning. I mean, like you said, the average selling price went down the holidays, I think in large part because those iPad Pros are not really necessarily big, like, holiday.
Sure.
Most people get by with the cheaper iPads, I think.
But I think it speaks to it in general, too, which is, like, if the iPad is kind of like a computer, I mean, the iPad Pro is really like a computer.
Sure, yeah.
And,
We bought one for my uncle when he retired, although then somebody said he was still using his laptop. And I'm like, no, kill that laptop with fire. It was terrible. But we bought him an iPad, a 9.7-inch Pro, which I feel like he's not a very technically savvy person, so it took some working to sort of get him into it. But I think it is for all purposes a computer for, you know, again, as we've said for years, for like 80-90% of what you want to do, you know, possibly upwards of that depending on what your needs are.
For a very long time, the average selling price of an iPad has been, with a couple quarters of aberration, about $420. And it
is basically a little cheaper than what it cost when they released it, right? Like, that's about the price point they released it at.
Yeah. Well, in the early days, the average selling price of an iPad was more like $550 or $600, but it's not now. It's $422 last quarter. And that is, you know what? That's not an iPad Pro.
No,
That is a large percentage of iPad sales are at the low end. That's just how it is. And this cuts that price, so it may increase demand. It gets them away from, I liken this in my macro piece to the iPhone SE, where it's like, it's a new product, and it's actually designed to be cheap. But it's got new tech in it. It's not all new tech, but it's got some new tech in it, enough to say that it's not a recycled product like the old Tim Cook, like, push last year's model down and then push the previous year's model further down, and then eventually it goes away. Mm-hmm. This is a different tack on that, which is, no, it's the brand new iPad. You know, and techie people know, well, you know, it doesn't have any of the Pro features, and the screen is kind of old, and there's an air gap. It's not a laminated display, and it doesn't have the color gamut and all of those things, right? But for a regular person, like, I was thinking about my sister bought an iPad, and I didn't know. This was a few years ago, and we were over before they moved to Ohio. They lived in Phoenix, so we're down there visiting my parents. I think my dad was still alive then, and Christmas Day, I think, we went up to their house, and they got an iPad, and it was back in that period where the iPad 2 was still for sale, even though it really should not have been, and they got an iPad 2, and I was just like, And that was the market, is they wanted an affordable iPad, and that was the affordable iPad, so they bought it. And it's, you know, it was old tech. It was like three-year-old tech, and I felt so bad, but that was what they wanted to buy. I like this better, right, which is it's affordable, but it's not, it doesn't feel
ancient.
Like old. Yeah, it doesn't feel like old tech.
The SE, as you said, is the perfect comparison. It turns out that sometimes people just want a model that isn't the, you know, Apple does this whole, like, we're going to sort of, this is the model we sell you, right? Like the Model T approach of, like,
this year's iPhone.
You can have any color you want as long as it's iPhone 7.
As long as it's space gray or
rose gold. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or red. We'll get to that. Hmm. But, you know, I think they are realizing, especially now that we're, you know, 10 years or so into the iPhone and 7 years into the iPad, like, it doesn't necessarily, it's not, there are other vectors to attack that problem with. And some of it is that people want something that's more affordable, and they will take the trade-off of something that is not maybe the latest and greatest technology or all the features, but that does the job well. And so this serves those people. Like, Apple could just be selling 2-year-old, 3-year-old iPads, right, at a lower price. And so this serves those people and, like, welcomes them in as customers, and it enhances and enlarges the ecosystem, right? And makes those people customers of apps and using other services and stuff like that. So for Apple's perspective, perspective, yeah, they may not make as much on margin by selling, you know, a product that is has really high profit, but they'll get more customers in the door maybe. So that's unusual. It's not always been the way they did business, but it's smart. I think it works for them.
And like the screen technology, I mean, because they went back to the iPad Air 1 screen technology, that's way cheaper. So that lowers the price of each one. So that increases their profit margin, allows them to lower that price. And for a person, and my point about my sister is like for somebody who's price sensitive and is not techie, they don't care that it's not a laminated display with a glare coat and all of those things, right? And I'm actually kind of fascinated to know like Apple's market research about like customer perception of the iPad Air versus the iPad Air 2. If there was some knowledge there about how people did not care about the feature differences so much between those two products and that they decided to use that as evidence, or whether it was simply like, wow, we could save $20 on each one of these by changing the Air 1 screen. Let's do that.
I mean, I'm sure they're making money. Like they're not selling a product that they're not making money on, right?
Right. Oh yeah. I mean, the margins are going to be good, but it's interesting that they made some of those decisions that I would argue people who are in the market for a lower price tablet probably don't care so much about. People, they don't care. I mean, they don't care about the processor, but that at least allows Apple to have it, like say it runs apps in the latest version of the operating system. That's almost a favor to Apple. Like, let's put in a modern processor so that when we're supporting all these tablets in 4 years, groan about the fact that they can't run iOS 14. Right.
And if you keep running those through the paces and updating them a little bit, like every few years, you sort of keep up with that curve.
Right.
And
because now they can just generate
that.
They can just create new iPad generations with a slightly faster processor. And leave it kind of alone. Like the iPhone SE might be the same thing where they...
that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, they rev the SE to a second generation iPhone SE and it looks exactly the same, but it's got a slightly faster processor in it.
Yeah, right. I think that makes it's a smart move because there are people who just want a lower cost or a smaller phone.
Yeah.
And there it is. You're done.
And the iPad and the iPad Mini are what those are for. It's the same deal.
Yeah, the Mini is an interesting case here because they did away with the lower configuration price or the lower configuration of storage, dropped the price on the higher configuration of storage. But it's still, they didn't change anything else, is my understanding. No processor change, no internal change. It's still the iPad Mini 4. And so, you know, part of me had expected, you know, maybe they would ditch the number, right? And they just be like, do a similar thing with the iPad where it's like, here's the iPad Mini. It's, you know, slightly, it's last year's processor and it's
fifth generation.
Not quite good, but, right, yeah.
In parentheses.
So I think maybe part of it is that the iPad Mini doesn't do as well and they don't want to spend as much time on it. Maybe they worried it would take away from the margins of that iPad, the new iPad. All these things are possibilities. Or maybe they have a revision there that's just not ready yet. I think that's a possibility as well. But I think that they'll want to cover that eventually.
Yeah, they'll want to get that A8 processor out of there and get it to the A9.
Sure, right. Or they'll just kill it entirely. I don't know how well it sells.
I don't know. I mean, I bet it sells okay because it's got a low price.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Now it doesn't, right? Now it's $399 and the full iPad is $329.
And it's better.
So now it's almost like a premium that you pay because you want the smaller device.
Right.
And it's for a niche market at $128. They don't have a 32 anymore. That's kind of weird.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing there, I mean, this is sort of what we're sort of beating around the bush here, is the idea that like, well, by playing in these markets now, Apple they have a solution there for that question. You want a smaller screen, you want a cheaper iPad, etc. That means that those people, if they're looking at buying a tablet, aren't necessarily going other places, right? Like there are fewer areas where Apple simply doesn't compete anymore. And I think, you know, sure, if you're looking for $100 or under tablet, I don't think they'll ever compete in that market, frankly.
Right.
But, you know, they are sort of shaving off the edges of all the places where people are like, oh, I can't even look at an iPad because they don't do this. And I think that's smart, again, because they're trying to grow the iPad. The iPad has not been growing. So, you know, trying to appeal to more customers is a good move.
Yeah. What else about anything else about I guess
talk about the red iPhone.
Yeah, let's talk about the other press releases. So
it's red.
It's a red iPhone. It's anodized.
We can all agree.
I've been complaining that Apple needs to do more colorful products, right? And this is an actual colorful product. It's the product red, you know, SKU and all of that. But it's a It's a colorful.
I kind of hope this is a backdoor into a colorful iPhone. Yeah, like maybe I just started thinking, you know, next year or something, if they wanted to do kind of like when they did back the 5S and the 5C, it's like, oh, let's have a like a 7C or something like that with different colored, you know, aluminum cases. And then we'll have like the iPhone 8 or next or whatever the heck they're going to call it. You know, sort of the flagship model. And like, I'd like to see a return to some of those like different colored cases that they did with the, you know, iPods at various times. Cause I think it's cool. It's a pain in the butt, I'm sure, to manage all the SKUs on all those extra colors, but you know, depending on how popular these things are, I imagine that the success of the red iPhone might help inform that decision at some point down the road if it sells really well. Like, well, colors, they're a good way to appeal to more customers.
Yeah, I want it in blue, but you know, that's
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I want a green one.
It's great.
Yeah,
anodized aluminum can be lots of different colors. We learned that with the iPods, right? So it would be nice if they did that. What else was in the press releases?
Clips. You want to talk about clips?
I don't even know.
None of us have seen it.
Do you use it to send cards to people? Is that what it does?
In a manner of speaking. This is a weird, it's one of those like random left field things that happens every once in a while with Apple where they're like, we've got this thing. And you're like, what? Like, which essentially it's, you know, it's an app for making little videos that you can then share on social media or send to other people. And I was kind of speculating when I talked about this with Renee and Michael over at Apple Talk, like this is kind of, it's the outgrowth of live photos, which live photos are really cool, but as soon as you try to do something with them that's outside of the Apple ecosphere, they kind of fail miserably. You can't post them on Instagram without converting them. You can't post them on Twitter. You know, if you send them to someone who doesn't have a new iPhone, they can play them, but they've got to know that they're live photos. It's kind of haphazard. And so creating something that takes advantage of some of the, you know, technologies they've had for video editing, as well as for sort of the machine learning stuff, I think, provides an interesting idea. I don't know if it'll catch on because these things are always very capricious, right? Like, just really depends if people like it or not. So I think it's smart that they designed a tool rather than, say, they could have gone the other direction and tried to design something that was more in lieu of a social network. And that, I think, as we've always seen, is not their strong suit. And they tend to not succeed when they're trying to do something like that. So providing a tool that people can use with existing social networks, I think, has a much better shot of catching on than if they made it something else that was just kind of siloed.
Right. Yeah, this is... That's the right approach, and I'm going to reserve judgment. I think it's not a bad idea for them to try stuff like this. It shows off their hardware. If it flows into social media and people are like, oh, wow, that was really cool, how'd you do that? And the answer is, my iPhone has this app and their Android phone doesn't have it, then it's good for Apple on that level. And I heard some people say that, you know, this is Apple showing off some tech that it can't put anywhere else because it's kind of like, it's processing images and videos and doing stuff that you could do in like augmented reality, which is a future direction for Apple. But right now they kind of don't have a great place to put this. And so they're putting it in this app. It's also good that it's not yet another feature being rolled into the camera app.
Right.
Because Lord.
I think that's smart. There's too much stuff in there as well. It's another swipe over. Just keep swiping. Keep swiping.
Yeah, there's already a lot in there, right? So, yeah.
It's interesting. We'll see when it drops in a week or two, just if it ends up being useful or kind of a dud. But,
yeah. Yeah, we'll see. So, the other news was workflow, which we both wrote about. Which it's been kicking out there for a while. It is kind of esoteric. I saw some people like try it now that it's bought by Apple and made free, and they're like, I don't get it, or this seems too complicated and most people won't want to use it. And it's like, yeah, most people won't want to use it. But if you're a power user on iOS, it can unlock a huge amount of functionality. It has pushed the platform way beyond what I think a lot of people thought the platform could do. And it's interesting that it is now owned by the platform owner and the principals at Workflow workflow are Apple employees, because one would hope that what this means is that Apple actually does care about power user productivity on iOS, and that this augurs a future where that's going to be built into iOS, whether it's workflow or some other, you know, some other app or subsystem in the system. The fact that workflow can only do so much as a third-party app too, and now they're not a third-party app, is also kind of interesting. So there's, you know, I think there's a downside, which is the fear that they've just sort of swallowed these guys whole and they'll either squander them or they'll put them to use on other parts of the platform that are not doing what workflow did. But, you know, I think there's hope that this, after all those stories about like Apple letting Sal Segoian go and all of that and disbanding that team, that maybe this is part of their long-term iOS strategy and maybe even Mac strategy, which is taking an approach that's more like what workflow is doing.
Right. I kind of approached it as, I wonder if they just felt like, you know what, it's time to just sort of reinvent the way we look at automation.
Right.
Because I can understand them feeling like they were kind of stuck in a particular mindset of the way that they wanted to approach that. And workflow obviously is very similar to Automator, like just sort of in the broad strokes,
sure.
Right? Like, you know, and that, and Automator was a good idea at the time. But I think the challenge on the Mac, as I wrote on this over at Macworld, is like the challenge on the Mac has been for, you know, there was a time when scripting and automation was kind of the only way to do certain things. Like you had to be, in order to be a PC user back in like the early 80s, mid 80s, you kind of had to be part scripter, programmer. Like there were a lot of sort of nuts and bolts to move around. Apps have gotten way better, you know, over the years. The system has gotten much more powerful. The features that have been added in, like a lot of the stuff that you used to have to do that, has kind of gone away. And sure, there are still repetitive tasks that people do every day that can benefit from automation. But there are a lot of like more lightweight tools that handle a lot of that. I'm thinking of stuff like, you know, your text expander or your other like text snippet stuff, right? Like the idea that you can respond to an email and like paste in a text very easily that is like form or boilerplate text, right? Like a lot of the very common low-hanging fruit automated tasks are able to be handled in other ways. So fewer people need those automation skills.
Yeah. Although I don't know. I think there's some truth to that. At the same time, there are people who want added complexity. But mm-hmm. You're right. I think you're right. Like scripting a computer feels like a very 80s kind of model.
Yeah.
And Automator is a late 90s, early 2000s model. And then
right.
Workflow is kind of like Automator, but it's kind of more. But you're right. What's happened here, it reminds me of like how Twitter didn't come up with at replies and hashtags and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
App developers came up with X callback URL, which is the system that is, instead of having Apple events, which is what happens on the Mac, where an app can say, hey, send this to this other app. In iOS, it's all based on the one way that apps could send data to one another, which is to register and say, I handle a certain kind of web protocol. And then another app would say, I have a URL in this certain kind of web protocol. And the system would be like, oh, I've got an app that does that, and pass that URL. And the URL was not a web URL. It was a data-bearing construct targeting one app from another app. But with X callback URL, you know, everybody built their apps to be able to hook into other apps following this format. And then workflow comes in and is able to add a bunch of functionality of its own, plus tie into all those apps. And you end up with the app building community, the third party app building community, creating inter-application communication and scripting despite Apple.
Right. And I think that's amazing. And the sort of the hugest win here is this idea that, you know, workflow succeeded in an environment where Apple did very little to sort of foster anything in that area. From the scripting side and like the Automator side, I think they were always kind of awkward because you could be very good at automating or scripting. But it always, to me, felt like a weird middle ground where people who were not technical, like there was just no chance like, that they were going to sit down and write an Apple script. And then for a lot of people who are very, and we know many programmers who, and I'm one of these people who did work in programming. I have the hardest time grokking an Apple script. Like I can't
support Apple script in any way. Right. I, you know, I can. Apple script is not ever mastered. It is, you know, it is survived.
It's esoteric to the extreme. Oh, yeah.
No,
right?
I don't succeed at doing Apple scripts. I survive. I get it to a point where it works and I'm like, all right, it's great. Like, I don't have to understand it. I just do it because it allows you to connect apps together, which is the thing about inter-app communication and workflow and X callback URL on iOS is, for me, the most powerful thing you can do with scripting is connect apps that don't know about each other, but you know about them. And you're like, I need to take this from this app and put it in this app and do that 30 times. I don't want to copy and paste and switch apps. I want to write a thing that says, you know, boop, 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 does it 30 times and is done. And that's what I want.
And the problem with that on the Mac has always been, like, Automator is just, it's not very good.
No,
it's not.
Well, it's an automation system that is built
rooted in these old ideas of doing things.
And built the problem is in AppleScript, it's built on the foundation of thinking about AppleScript and about apps that were built for AppleScript. And then it kind of didn't take off. I mean, people tried to create actions at the beginning, but like if you have an app that doesn't support actions but supports AppleScript, you end up writing
an AppleScript or a shell script,
In fact, I'd say all the Automator actions that I use, all of them either run an AppleScript or run a shell script.
Right, because the power just wasn't there. And even doing relatively simple things, it sometimes felt like it's like watching somebody try to hit a football with a baseball bat,
this is not how this works. Workflow can be like that too, because one of the problems in simplifying any programming structure, workflow has actually gotten a lot better with this magic variables thing that they did, but it used to be like, because it's just a straight down top to bottom workflow is how both workflow and Automator work. If you want to like set a variable and then set another variable, you end up like do this thing and then set a variable and then do it again and then set another variable and then go back to the first variable and do this thing and then go back to the second variable and do this thing. If you think about it, I mean, not even if you're a programmer, but if you're somebody like me, you think about it and you're like, surely this is not the most logical way to flow from point A to point B, but it was the way you had to do it. And workflow still has some of that. But, you know, I would say, why do I use Automator actions at all? It's because there are parts of the Mac UI that tie into them. And so it's easier for me to attach that Apple script or that shell script because I can save it as a service and then it shows up in the Finder. That's like my number one way I do this stuff is I have scripts. Right. And rather than run them in terminal, I just run them from the Finder. Well, you know, on iOS, the equivalent is, first off, it was sharing extensions, which workflow supports. So you can be in any app and do the share button and do run workflow. And it will take the data from the app and go to town and do stuff with it. And then with iOS 10, they added the Today View widgets that have executable code in them. And that takes it to this whole other level. When I was working on the story for Tom's Guide, I explored more workflow widgets than I ever had before. And it's amazing because a lot of them will just run in the Today View next to Notification Center. Because if you save it on the desktop or on the home screen and you tap a workflow, it like opens workflow and then runs the workflow. And it's not quite magical, but it works. But it, like the tip calculator, if you put that on your Today View widget and you swipe down and show the Today View, you just tap the tip calculator runs in the widget. And you do all of the, and it's interactive. You know, you put in a number and then say okay, and then it says what's your tip, and then it gives you the result and all that. And a lot of this stuff. So Apple has built these extension points where apps can live that workflow lives in, and it is so much akin to the way that I use Automator on the Mac, which is I just want this stuff to live someplace convenient in the interface.
Right,
and Apple has provided on the Mac, it's the services menu. And so that's what I use.
The more time you have to dig through and find the keys or whatever, the farther it is, the less useful it is. And for me, Automator never quite succeeded for me because every time I sat down to create a workflow that actually solved a problem, I just ended up banging my head against the desk, and invariably it was like, this is so much longer than it would take me to do this. Heck, I could probably even do this 5 or 6 times. Like I have, every 3 or 4 times a week, I'm like syncing up audio files, converting them, et cetera. And it's like, could I write a workflow to do this? Absolutely. Do I have any idea how to do that? No, not at all. I've tried 4 or 5 times and like I literally have a folder littered with half built attempts to automate this process.
I do have I have an Automator action that does a lot of that, but But yeah, it's hacked together, right? And you know, I don't want to overstate workflow here because workflow has these same issues. I was trying to do, I set up a thing for Six Colors where now I can run a workflow on a photo in Photos and it resizes it to the right size, saves it as a JPEG, uploads it to the Six Colors web server via FTP and puts HTML on my clipboard. That is the HTML of tags that are needed to refer to that image in a story. And then I paste that into my story and I'm done. It's great. Right?
Right.
I had to email, unfortunately, I know these guys, but I more than once I have emailed Federico Vittici or Fraser Spears and been like, what am I missing here? And they're like, oh yeah, you need to do this thing. And they like got the secrets of it, which is why every time I talk to the workflow guys, I would say, you need more documentation. And they just posted a lot of documentation actually, but it's like, you need more documentation. Somebody needs to write, either them or back in the day there would be books about workflow, but they don't sell computer books anymore to speak of. So it doesn't exist, but like somebody needs to do that because I had to go to the source, which was Federico, and say, how did you do this? And he's like, oh yeah, there's this thing you need to do. And he sent me a sample and I was like, oh, and then the like the scales are lifted and I'm like, oh, now I can see.
You need to find the master. And
it's so I don't want to overstate this. You know, it is the wrong story to say that this makes the iPad more powerful for regular users. I think that some of the off the shelf workflows in the workflow gallery that comes with the app can do that. There's a really cool one that you can put on your Today View that is just like basically go home and you tap it and it opens the Maps app, sets your home as your destination or any address you want and kicks it into driving directions. It's like one tap, it's done. You don't have to search for your home address and tap it and start directions. One tap and it's done. Or one tap to send your, you know, in my case, my wife, a message saying, where am I and how long will I be home? So every time I leave like Twit after doing a podcast up there, that's about a 40-minute drive away, I tap this one button and my wife gets a text that says, I'm at Twit and I'll be home in whatever the current driving time is. And that's just, those are simple, but most of them, yes, this is a power user feature. It's for power users. It's for people on iPad Pro. But if you're going to sell iPad Pros, you need to have features for power users because otherwise, why will they use your product?
And the other side of that is what it helps do is gets rid of all those complaints where they're like, oh yeah, this would be great if it only had this one feature.
Right.
And that's a feature that like seven people need, right? Like if you can build your own to a certain extent, it does help take the pressure. Like I'm imagining that driving time scenario thing and thinking, oh yeah, there's an argument where like Apple could build that into the Maps app, right? But like, are they going to?
No.
Like probably not enough people need it. It probably would clutter up the interface for all the people who don't need it. But, you know, having an alternative way to do that. And again, that's been sort of the trick is from the beginning, Apple has not really taken that approach. They often feels like they have to like be like pulled kicking and screaming into doing that kind of thing. You know, i.e. like web apps and native apps, right? Like, you know, sometimes it feels like, no, this is the way we want to do it. Like, this is the way we're going to do it. This is the only way to do it. And like, that's very much an Apple approach. And sometimes that works out great, because it means you don't have all these complicated features or options cluttering up things. But sometimes it doesn't work great because there's really no recourse if Apple does not do the thing that you want it to do. So I think this could be a really big move for Apple. I'm excited at the prospect of it. I'm tempering that excitement with some caution just because I know a lot of people who do think maybe this is just straight up acquisition.
The acqui-hire.
And they don't really care. Yeah, they don't really want workflow. They just want the people.
They just want smart iOS developers. And
I also feel like if you're going to hire the people working on this particular app, then you hire them to work on something that's like that at least. So
They bought the app. To be fair, they bought the app. They could have bought the people and shut down the app, or bought the people and sold off the app, but instead they Apple bought them and the app, made it free, put it in the App Store. It doesn't mean that that could be like the Siri app, right, which was there and then it went away and it was replaced by an OS feature. But even if it's, I worry about them sanding off some of the rough edges, but I feel like, you know, workflow is just a rough edges app. That's actually like, it's not a consumer app, so I feel like on that level you just take you don't worry about it. Like, you don't have to worry about Apple super simplifying it, because it's not meant for regular people to use. It's meant to make power users be powerful on iOS and do things that you didn't think iOS could do, but it can totally do. And also, Apple is so app-centric. The App Store has been such a success. The great thing about that is that an app that can do some stuff on its own, but that is a mediator between apps and that lets apps feed each other. And I was thinking, like, on Mac OS, you end up doing things like, you know, I have an MP3 encoding command line app, right? Mm-hmm. I've got that audio syncing command line app. Well, it's like, what's the equivalent on iOS? And the answer is, it's just an app, right? And that's the beauty of it is, yeah, you can't like compile something from open source and all that. It has to be in the app store. But the same model, you know, it's a little bit different, but it's the same idea, which is I've got an app that does this and an app that does that and an app that does this other thing. And I want to use them all together. They don't need to do extra work other than make themselves available via like the callback URL structure. They just are good at what they're good at. I don't need a one size fits all app that does all three things. I just need three good apps. And then workflow passes it from app one to app two to app three. That's great. Like that is the power of having all of these apps that do all this great stuff on iOS, if it can be harnessed. And workflow, it is a miracle about the stuff that workflow is capable of doing. Initially, I think they were afraid that it wasn't even going to get into the app store, but the fact that it has to follow third-party app rules and still does what it does is amazing. Imagine if one, it no longer has to do that. And two, imagine if part of the strategy here is that Apple is going to evangelize support for automation technologies and X callback URL or some version thereof, or an official equivalent of that in its own apps, as well as for the rest of the system. That's amazing. And then floating on the side is Swift, which I do wonder about if that's part of the story too, which is if you want to do very particular things, could you just write some Swift code inside of workflow and run it, which is not, you can enter your own code, but it's like, I feel like Apple being involved takes it up to like a whole other level in terms of, of it being allowed instead of having to get it past app review.
Yeah, that is an interesting challenge, because Apple has traditionally shied away from letting you write like executable code inside apps. But, you know, as I said, Swift Playground kind of does that. And this is also
Pythonista does it too. But the idea is you're not supposed to it's not supposed to come with software. It's just the interpreter's there, and then you have to write your own software for it. And I wonder, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm hopeful about it. And I feel like this is great, because this is like the argument that Mike and I had a couple weeks ago on Upgrade about windowing on iOS in the future. And it's like, what you want is to get the goodness of the old stuff, but do it in a better way. That's
not
newer.
Feel burdened by this is the way we did it. This is the way we have to do it.
You don't want a copy of it. You want it to be like that, addressing those issues, but from a fresh perspective. And I look at this and I think one of the great things about what Apple has done with the share extensions and with the Today View is those are better than, well, if you put a file in users library services and it's set to take these certain things in, then if you right click on a file in the Finder, or you go to the Apple menu and go under services, or that's how you do this all on the Mac. And on iOS, it's way better, because you just use the share menu. It says
there's
workflow.
There's only one place for it to live.
And you go boop boop, and the workflow runs. And it's better, right? It's very similar. But this is a modern implementation of that same thing, and it maybe works better in the context of how you use apps. And that's great. That's cool.
We're all winners.
So I don't know. I'm going to choose to be optimistic, because I feel this is Apple sending a signal that it actually does care about these more esoteric uses of iOS, and that investing more in the concept of the iPad Pro as a truly pro device. And that goes hand in hand with that iPad. Or there's the iPad for $329. You pick.
Yep. I agree. I think this is all positive developments, even if they're not kind of the earth-shaking announcements we wanted to see. But this is kind of the Apple thing now.
My cat is making an appearance today.
I thought you were very angry about what I just said. It was super confusing. I thought you were going
I don't think he wants to be here.
I don't blame him. Who else wants to be on the show anyways?
All right, cat. unhappy. Anyway, all my animals. I don't normally do podcasts with the door closed because the cat, if the cat's in here, then he will get off the beanbag chair and come over and bug me. But it's a secret podcast. Yeah, anything is possible.
That's allowed. That is allowed.
Yes. I choose to believe that part of the appeal of the secret podcast is that occasionally my pets will appear.
Sure. Yeah. There's nothing in here to randomly appear. So, I mean, if it randomly appeared, it would probably scare the crap out of me.
Well,
too,
the lady, you could talk to the lady.
I could talk to the lady, but I'm not going to talk to the lady.
Okay. That's fine.
It just sounds like we're kind of slightly demeaning my girlfriend, but she's not here, just so no. We're clear that we're okay. Talking about the Echo.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, thanks to everybody out there for being a subscriber to Six Colors. We appreciate it. It helps us do this and keep the lights on and all of that. We didn't have a sponsor this week, so, you know, we're doing it for you is what I'm saying.
Yeah, help us keep the smart lights on.
Yeah, exactly right. And, Dan, have a good weekend.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.